Hi, I'm Matt Martin, general manager here at KALW. Cross Currents, usually heard at this time, will be back tomorrow. But today, we continue the KALW tradition started by my predecessor and mentor, Nicole Sawaya, the manager's report to the listeners. It has been an unusually long time since my last manager's report, nearly 8 months. And that's because when I was last on the air talking to you, it was to make a big announcement that after more than 11 years as general manager, with 5 years as a producer at the station before that, I would be leaving KALW. If you want to hear my full explanation of that decision, I invite you to listen back to that program, which is archived on our website, kalw.org. But in a nutshell, I'd say that I'm thankful and proud to have been part of a truly wonderful time of growth and creativity at KALW. But I am also pretty clear that I'm not the right leader for the next stage of the station's development. So since the fall, I have worked closely with Gentle Blythe, who's KALW's liaison at the San Francisco Unified School District, as well as station staff and volunteers, community advisors, and a number of our allies in public radio to search for and select the next leader for KALW. It was a thorough process and a long one, but I feel very good about the candidate who emerged as our first choice and who I'm very glad to say will become general manager starting in September. Her name is Tina Pamantuan, and she comes to us from the City University of New York, where she directs the audio journalism program in the Graduate School of Journalism there. She helped found that program 11 years ago and is going to be seeing through her work there over the summer, which is why she will be coming on board as KALW's leader in September. You are going to learn a lot more about Tina Pamantuan in this hour, and I'm very glad to say she joins us from Argo Studios in New York City. Tina, so great to have you on KALW and on the Manager's Report.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me. It's been a really exciting day, and this is a great way to end it.
Well, I first just want to start, I really want listeners, obviously you're going to have a lot of time to absorb information about KALW, to learn more about the station, its staff, its volunteers, its community. But I want to give listeners a chance to learn about you, since this is their first opportunity to do so. So maybe you could start talking just a bit about how you began in radio.
Sure. So I started as a DJ in college. So I was working the 6 a.m. shift, which meant that my roommate and I had to wake up at 5 a.m. I, always woke her up when I woke up because we had one of these very small dorm rooms. And I'm still convinced to this day that she was probably the only person who was actually listening. Eventually, after my freshman year, I got a slot later in the afternoon, so I was able to bring on guests, mostly friends, people that I convinced to let me interview them. And it was mostly a music show, but I'd have poetry, I'd have people talking about campus events or a club, and pretty much anyone I could even convince to come to the station for free food. So that was my booking technique at the time, and I'm happy to say it's come a long way since then.
And so talk about, so the college DJ days, there's a lot of people that have those, but who don't end up actually making a career in radio. What was your next step after that? When did you?
So, I did the college radio thing for a while. I did it all throughout college. I even had a radio show in Glasgow, Scotland, where I went for a semester abroad. And that was where I really kind of, I think, because we had so many more callers there, I was at a station called Subcity Radio, which is at the University of Glasgow. And it's a station that's known for its music. I'm sure it's still around, and I'm sure it's still doing great work. So this was in the mid-90s, and I got, the chance to be on the radio there, which I was surprised about. And they wanted me to do the announcing, but they were very protective of the playlist. So I would be working the board and doing announcing, but Someone, usually a guy, always looking very cool with his turntables, would be sort of next to me mixing records and playing CDs. And so I think I was highly valued there for what they called my Atlantic accent, which I guess they thought was very exciting and, quote-unquote American.
Mixing things up.
Mixing things up. And it was just great because people actually called in and people loved the music, and we would give things away, and it was like in a dingy little flat that was owned by the University of Glasgow, and so there was just lots of opportunities to interface with listeners there, which is one of the reasons I love KALW so much, because of the interactivity with the listeners. But I did have one or two calls that I really remember quite vividly as moments where I thought, wow, this is where I can really hear how radio impacts people and how it's so personal for folks. And we would give things away. Like, I remember one time we gave away an old vacuum cleaner that happened to be in the flat, and crates of, do you know this soda called Urn Brew?
I'd never heard of it till this week. No, on NPR they were talking about there being a sugar-free version of it or something.
Oh, this week they were? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I did see a posting about that, but I didn't hear the story. So yeah, I mean, that was, that's surprising, a sugar-free version. So it's a kind of rusty orange-colored soda, and we would kind of give away whatever we found in the flat and do these little contests on air. And I just remember a caller the person who won the vacuum cleaner, actually, being the right caller and having the right answer to some trivia question that we had posed. And he was just so thankful. He was this young guy, probably a teenager. I remember he worked at a grocery store, and so he was in the middle of his day, and he must have been calling on a payphone because this is pre-cell phone days. And he just was so glowing about how happy he was to be on the air and to be connecting with us, and how much he loved the station. And you know, I didn't think that I would get into radio past college, but it was a moment when I sat back and I thought, wow, this is a medium that really like works itself into the fabric of people's days, and that's just, you know, is very personal and very intimate for people, and like they care about it, and that meant something to me.
How did you go from doing that, not being, you know, saying like, oh, radio, you obviously liked it but didn't think of it as a potential career, to ending up working at NPR?
Yeah, so I almost don't know, but I did actually end up, I had a friend who worked on Morning Edition, and I went to visit her one day, and on my tour of the building, I actually met somebody who said, hey, I think we might need an intern for our show. And the show was Radio Expeditions. I was actually considering a job in biophysics at the time. I was working in a biophysics lab, and I'd been offered a job in Maine to work at kind of the sister lab. And so I was thinking along those lines, but I happened to meet this woman who then introduced me to her boss, who's Carolyn Jensen, a very well-known producer at NPR, one of the first employees of NPR. And from there, I think just a week after graduation from college, I ended up interning, and that internship turned into a job. And I was, you know, in those days, I don't know if it's still this way, but at NPR, there were people who temped a lot, and I did a lot of temping. But unlike most people, I didn't hop from show to show. I pretty much stayed at Radio Expeditions, which really became my home at NPR, and I have to say I'm so thankful for that. I had wonderful mentors there. Alex Chadwick and Carolyn Jensen were my mentors there, and Carolyn was my boss, and Alex was her husband. And so I kind of fell into a little family there, and it was just wonderful. They really taught me a lot in terms of writing and also production. Some of the early lessons that I learned there, I have to say, I still, you know, teach in my classes. They're really important to me.
Talk about some of those, because for the last, now over a decade, you've been working as a journalism educator at CUNY's audio journalism program. Talk about what you learned at NPR and how you apply that working with students and running that program.
Sure. So I learned to write with Alex Chadwick. He edited some of my first scripts, and I got to write under him, which was awesome. I remember telling me that writing was all about precision, and if you didn't get it right, the right word, the right tone, then you just had to go back and rewrite it and rethink it. And that really helped me, especially after later when I became an editor. I once had a student who said I had a, quote, compulsive need to edit. And I'm not sure how she meant it, but I think that the root of that comes from the early lessons I had in journalistic writing and with Alex. So there's just a thrill getting just the right word, the right tone, the right meaning. It's like that's just, you know, a big part of journalism, and it's important to me. So I remember that early lesson, and I've always applied it in terms of working with my students and teaching the importance of getting it right, you know, getting the right word, but also getting the facts right, of course, is essential.
So from the beginning of your work in public radio, you also were really committed to and involved in developing new voices in media. You started an organization called Extreme Youth Zone Media in D.C. Talk a little bit about what that was and what you learned about teaching there.
Sure. So XYZ Media, or Extreme Youth Zone Media, was my very first experiment in trying to run my own nonprofit project. And what I did was I started working at a youth development organization in my neighborhood. And at the time, I think it's changed quite a bit since then. So this was in Washington, D.C. The neighborhood had quite a number or a certain number of Vietnamese refugee families. So I worked with this Asian American organization at a development center for youth where I got to teach some basic radio skills and allow them kind of youth radio style or WNYC radio rookie style, have them report about things that were important in their lives. And I definitely took those programs as some of my models at that time. And I was just able to connect with young people in this way that was really important to me. I was very young at the time, so it was also a way for me to kind of understand my own voice and what I wanted to do and what was important to me in terms of public media and the values of being inclusive with voices on the radio, which especially at that time felt like it's very different now. And so this is in like the early 2000s. It felt a little, people didn't talk as much about expanding voices and diversity in radio as they do now. And we still have a long way to go, but certainly back then I felt like it seemed like a very specialized thing that I was doing. And I think that work has carried through to the work that I do at CUNY, which is a very diverse population. Of course, it's the university of the city. So we have, we have university-wide, hundreds of languages spoken. So I feel like that was the beginning of me really thinking through what I wanted to do. And in some ways, I wasn't following a direct path. I was just sort of going with what I thought was important to me and the reasons why I liked public media, like what I thought it could provide and the opportunities I thought it could provide for a lot of different communities.
I'm KLW General Manager Matt Martin, and you're listening to the Manager's Report to the listeners. In this half hour, I'm talking with someone who herself will one day be doing these reports, Tina Pamintuan, who we today announced as the next General Manager of KALW. She's going to be taking the helm in September. And Tina, it's great to have you on the air here at KALW. And maybe you can talk about, this work at NPR, work you did with this nonprofit in D.C., obviously, this last decade working at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. How did you find out about this opportunity at KALW, and what attracted you to it?
Well, the very first time that I saw the posting for it, because I saw it in multiple places, but I have to say the first time, and I'm not a big Facebook user, it has to be said, but I did see it posted on Facebook in one of these diversity and public media groups that I belong to. And someone from the KALW newsroom had described the newsroom. Well, they posted, of course, your call. And then it also said something about chocolate o'clock and spontaneous dance parties. Do you know anything about that?
I have participated in both of these activities. Chocolate o'clock simply being fortification when it gets to be about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, provided by members of the news department. The dance party is a whole other thing.
Okay,
yes,
so I saw this and it caught my eye. It was like a great piece of Facebook writing. It really drew me in, and I just thought, well, this just seemed like a newsroom where people were leading their full lives, where they were supported and allowed to be creative, and I did a little investigating, asked some people about the newsroom, and I remember one person I spoke to about the station mentioned that there was a culture of yes at KALW, and how inclusive it was, and I really just felt like it would be a place that I could, that I could feel comfortable, and that the people seemed great, and when I listened to the station, it had this wonderful mix of community voice, national and international programs. I just thought the mix was quite unusual of, a community radio station and a public radio station like the thing I feel that's true about KALW is that it's both things. And you don't always see that, I think, in local public radio stations. You see lots of different types, which is one of the reasons I love local stations. But there was something about the mixture of the two that really drew my attention. And so I saw that. And then, I had been thinking for a while I might, you know, off and on over the years that local radio might be something I would want to get into. I feel like I went to college radio, but I didn't, and I did NPR, but then I didn't kind of do that step of the local station. And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to include that in my career one way or another? I at the time I didn't dream of it as in this position, but I'm certainly glad that it came to be that. And so I just took the words of some folks that I knew to heart, and what I wanted in my next in my career, and so here we are.
And so you obviously you're talking to us from New York, but you do have you've listened to KALW here in the Bay Area. You are connected to the Bay Area now.
That's right. Yeah. So in the summer of 2016, my husband and I moved out there, and he's been living out there this whole time, and I've gone back and forth quite a bit. So, you know, I'll spend months there at a time, but my job is here, so I'm in New York quite a bit as well. So I've been in both cities quite a lot over the last couple years.
And listeners should know that the transition of leadership here at KALW from myself to Tina is going to happen after Labor Day. Tina's going to see through her work at CUNY, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that she has basis for coming in and a strong transition when that time comes. We've already been exchanging lots of information, and she's been talking with a lot of staff at the station. This is a special manager's report talking to Tina Pamatuan, who will be the next manager of KALW. Tina, talk a little bit about what changes you have seen in public media from your perspective, where you think KALW fits into that landscape, and you know that informs your forming vision about where KALW could go next.
So through my work at the J School and also through my work with NPR's Next Generation Radio, which is a training program that visits different radio stations across the country and works with young journalists and would-be journalists, I visited stations in Miami, L.A., New Orleans, Cleveland, Boston, Chicago, Austin, Phoenix, lots of places, Pasadena. And each place is its own microcosm of public radio. And so I've seen a range of different things. I see, like, that a lot of places are building. So many of them have these larger, many of the larger ones have these public venues where audiences can be in the station's auditorium, or even if it's a smaller space, like some small listening space for live music events and recordings, live interviews, that type of thing. And I think there's a real value to that, to being able to bring people physically into the station when possible. It's like throwing your doors open to your home and welcoming people. You get to meet your listeners, and you hopefully get to bring in new listeners as well. So I've seen a lot of that. I've seen stations that are, there's a station in Phoenix that has this roving studio / food truck called Soundbite. And it has a kind of, I haven't seen it in real life. I've only seen pictures, but it kind of has this stage that kind of comes from the side, so you can bring it to community events and broadcast remotely. I think that's a great way to get into neighborhoods. You know, imagine if you had that during a pledge drive. Wouldn't that be great to roam the streets and be able to sign people up, and they could immediately get their, you know, tote bag or whatever it is that, you know, you were hoping to, that they would you know, donate in exchange for. So I've seen really interesting projects like that. There's definitely a lot of investigative projects that seem to be going on that at the local level, and I hope that KALW will get more involved with that. I know that already there's been projects with Reveal, and there was recently the lead paint exposure series that went out. So important work has already been done, and that's great because it means we're not starting from scratch, but we're actually building on something that's already there. So I've seen that in different stations that I've visited. And, you know, one of the things I really feel like is that, you know, there was always this promise of hyper-local media online and the promise of that we would be able to do local journalism even better online than we had been in other, you know, what they called old media. But I really feel like in some ways that didn't come to pass. You know, like there have been so many big projects over the years that people got really jazzed about. But public radio was always there kind of doing that thing in a way. And I see KLW as a station that very much sees itself as a local news institution and is doing that kind of hyper-local reporting that was promised through online, but kind of, you know, I just feel like public radio has taken on that mantle in a way.
And I think there's loads of opportunity to do that at KALW, and I think of projects like Sights and Sounds of East Oakland, where
that's
we're
right,
partnering
that's
with
right.
community reporters and doing live events that then bring that reporting back to the community. So it reaches people who may not be public radio listeners and may not know KALW. And so yeah. I think there's lots of opportunity to build on those kind of models. Any last thoughts before we go about how you think about what the next step is for KALW's development? Obviously, we're going to be talking through the summer about what that will involve, but I'd love to hear what you're thinking.
Well, you know, the next steps for KALW, I think, are to build its infrastructure so that all this great work... there's so much great content, and whenever I speak to a new staff member, because I'm just meeting staff members now, when I hear about what they do, I think, how is this being done by so few people? It seems like so much content and so much great work being done in schools and prisons. And so when I hear that, I just think, you know, there's got to be a way to build the infrastructure so that it can support this work and let it flourish and for the station to take its sort of what I think of as its rightful place within the San Francisco Bay Area landscape of media and journalism. It's been there for a very long time. It's the first FM, and I would really love to just see it blossom into that next stage. And I think that's done with some work on the infrastructure, with the community that, you know, has been there the whole time. And with some new voices and with some new ideas, which I hope to bring to the station.
Tina, it's been great to talk to you. Tina Pamantuan is the incoming, in September, new general manager of KALW. I'm Matt Martin, current station manager, going to be talking and working with Tina over the summer on this transition. And I want to thank you, Tina, for joining us, and thank everyone who has listened to the manager's report this evening. I want to thank David LaTulipe and also Paul Ruest, who is at Argo Studios in New York, who helped engineer things on that. And if you miss any of this program or would like to share it with others, it will be archived at kalw.org within the hour. And I do want to remind folks that tomorrow we are going to start KALW's May campaign. It is our first on-air fundraiser in 8 months. We're calling it the Public Radio Reunion, and we hope it will be a time when you join thousands of other people in celebrating and supporting local public radio. This leadership transition is a really exciting time, but it's also an important time to support KALW, and I hope you'll be part of making this campaign a big success. Thanks again, Tina. Appreciate you being with us. Thanks to everyone who's listening.
Thank you so much, Matt.